Welcome to In Media Les, a podcast about queer relationships in media. I'm Chloe.
And I'm Val.
And today, we'll be discussing the 2023 fantasy film Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves, directed by Jonathan Goldstein and John Francis Daly, starring a whole bunch of people, but including Chris Pine, Michelle Rodriguez, Regé Jean Page, Justice Smith, Sophia Lillis, and Hugh Grant. So, I think we need to get the elephant out of the room first, Val.
It's not really gay.
Yeah, exactly. You knew exactly what D&D. I was. Okay, you knew exactly where I was going to go with this. I'm glad you understood where I meant. But yeah, like it is a very diverse movie, like in a lot of ways, and it's strange to me as a result that it is so straight. Like, there is absolutely no queerness to be found, not even hints of it in the entire movie.
I think that, like, okay, it was such a tight plot that it didn't really have space for that, so I understand it. You know, like, so I'm not necessarily, like, against it or anything. I don't mind it not being queer. They had that one moment where Doric rescues that other druid. That was pretty homo, but...
Okay, now you're just grasping at straws if you think that's...
But other than that, the zero, even that was, yeah, like... But it was a little gay. It was a little gay.
Okay.
But there's like no actual...
That's some cope there, I feel like. I've got to say. I think we're just talking about this movie because we like Dungeons & Dragons, which is fine. And it's a really good movie.
It's so good. I didn't expect to legitimately love it.
Yes. This movie is really, really good. I think it helped that we saw it with our D&D group.
I think it really elevated the status of it, yeah.
Yeah, so if you're going to see this movie, if you haven't seen it already and you're listening to this episode for some reason, watch it with your D&D group if possible, because it's really good. And I don't know, it was just something about like some of the stuff that happened felt like stuff that had happened in our campaign.
Yeah.
And... You know, there were all these moments where, like, I don't know, like, I would make a sound and the person sitting next to me would laugh because they knew what, you know, I was reacting to. And, like, it just worked really well with people that I played D&D with, so.
Yeah. I know there was a lot of, like, Chloe character death moments in there. It also very much felt like, while you're watching, you can tell what roles are being made and, like, how the players are discussing things, or like when they're getting off track. It felt very much like the game that you're aware someone is playing, which I think, yes, was a really excellent touch.
Agreed. So actually, before we talk too much, I wanted to talk about kind of like the history of D&D on the screen, I guess.
Sure.
Very briefly, because maybe you don't have experience of it, but I do. Mm-hmm. Like, there was the 1980s animated series, which I'm guessing you've never watched, if I had to guess.
Absolutely not. I've only gotten into... So for context, you were there when I played my first game.
Right, that's when
I got into D&D.
But I wasn't sure if you had, like, gone back and watched it or something. It's not... I don't know that it's worth watching, but, like...
No, it's not.
It's, like, I don't know, like, six kids who get isekai'd. That's
new
the term,
favorite,
right?
Word.
My favorite. I do like that word because once
it's
you learn what that
word,
is,
it's
happening in so many different forms of media. But anyway, they get isekai'd into the world of Dungeons and Dragons, I guess. And the dungeon master is like this weird gnome guy who's just kind of a jerk, but also goofy, and he gives them all classes. But like, I think one of them is, I don't think they wanted to call someone a thief, so they made her an acrobat and stuff. Like, it's really goofy, and I forget who the bad guy is in it, but it's just really goofy, and it's about them trying to get home. So it's not really the best depiction of Dungeons & Dragons ever. I do think it maybe captures the goofiness of it, but that was, like, the only D&D on the screen for a while until... I think it was 2001 that the movie came out. Let me double check on that.
There's another movie? Check. Ooh.
There is. No, you do not want to ooh that movie.
I bet. Like, as soon as you said history of D&D on screen, I knew it was going to be awful because I've heard of none of these.
Okay, this is... This came out in 2000. Apparently, it also had a made-for-TV sequel, which I did not know about. But it is starring Justin Whalen, Marlon Wayans, a bunch of other people. I'm not going to go through it. Jeremy Irons. That was like the big name in it. That Jeremy Irons was in it somehow. And to me, the problem with this movie, as someone who's seen it, I saw it with my brother growing up, is that like... They clearly hate Dungeons and Dragons. Like, they want nothing to do with Dungeons and Dragons. They were just like, screw everything that had to do with Dungeons and Dragons. We're just going to make our own fantasy movie that maybe very loosely ties in to D&D in some roundabout way. And I don't know. It's just really bad. I don't know why they did it. I don't know why they... It's odd to me when... And I feel like this was very common with anything that had to do with a game until fairly recently, that if you were going to make a movie or a show based on it, you basically held the game in contempt and tried to do as little from it as possible.
Yeah, I never understood that. I would assume people who want to make it wanted to make it because they're fans. But very often that is not the case, which is weird to me, but probably makes sense for people in the industry who want to make money. But I hope that this is a good lesson for everyone, because like, this is very clearly like a movie that was made from love for the game. There's so yes. many tiny things in it that like, once again, I don't know, I feel like I 100% know that everyone in that theater hated us because of how excited and like into it we were.
Yeah, whatever. That's their problem for going to a movie on opening night, I guess.
It was wonderful. We had an excellent time there because yes. as people who play the game, every little, like there were so many just tiny, tiny things when they walk in a straight line or like over a rock, yeah. you know, that scene, just knowing that, like my favorite was that the bard used bardic inspirations out of battle.
Yep.
Which is what I do.
Yeah.
It's just the funniest, most hilarious thing to waste a bardic in like a scene that you know no one's gonna use it in, but it's like, it's just funny. And they do a lot of these little things. Like the druid's name is Dorcas. Doric, whatever.
Doric.
Dorcas. like her name is Doric. That is how a lot of people name their characters.
Yeah.
Like, it's excellent. I love this movie. I was actually climbing with Becky the other day and we're standing there quietly. And I turned to her about to start my sentence, and I'm like, you know, I really enjoyed the movie. Like, she finished my sentence because she yeah. was also thinking about it in that moment. And it's been over a week at this point.
She also messaged me while a little intoxicated on Friday night, telling me that she wanted to see the movie again. So
it's a really good movie.
It's a really good movie. They nailed it.
Yeah.
Thing I can say about how this turns out. And I think to add to what you're saying, I think if you just like sit back and imagine this as a D&D campaign, it works. Like all this stuff that happens in this story is all just like the crazy, weird, goofy, stupid stuff that the average D&D group gets up to. Like, starting at the beginning when they make their escape from that jail and, like, the person is about to tell them you're free to go. Like, that's, like, the DM was, like, about to be like, okay, you guys are free to go. And instead they hatched this really stupid plan to, like, grab this Eric Cochra and use him as, like, a hang glider, basically, to escape.
Which was excellent. It was hilarious.
And then that's the villain attempts that same escape at the end, and you could tell the DM was like not having it. It was like, no, it's a brick wall now, you can't yeah. jump through that one. Like, it's all stuff that like a DM, like you can totally see the DM, or like when they're in the Underdark and they accidentally set off the bridge puzzle by
stepping on it. Yeah,
Yeah, and so then they had to, like, the DM frantically has to find another reason for them to find a way across. And it's like, oh, yeah, you know that random walking stick you picked up? Turns out it's a, like, teleportation circle staff.
Yeah, it's really great. But I gotta say my favorite moment where you clearly see the DM, like, just letting the players do the thing but then fixing it is when they split the party and it immediately goes bad. And then he has Safina, like, the... Oh, I just gendered the DM. Wow. Straight to jail with me. And the DM has Safina say, no, let them all go into the arena instead of, like, keeping them arrested.
Yeah.
And you can clearly see it's an avoidance of a TPK.
Yeah.
And that was so funny.
There's so many moments of it where it's just very clearly, like... This is the DM, like, totally ad-libbing to stop the party from getting themselves all killed, which is something, as someone who's DM'd a bunch, is something you have to do sometimes. I was going to ask you that,
yes.
You totally have sometimes where it's just like, my players tonight, for whatever reason, just really want to get themselves killed. I don't know if I'm communicating things poorly or they don't really understand what they're doing, but I'm not going to let them do that, so I'm going to, like, give them another chance. It's like the same thing when they got chased by the dragon Themberchod, which, by the way, is one of the best scenes. Like,
yeah.
This really fat dragon who's just so cute. He's so fat he can't fly. He's just, like, rolling everywhere.
Literally.
And sliding on his belly. And then, like, they kind of get trapped by Themberchod, and you can just tell the whole, like, sequence where they find the water and they're like, well, we'll break through and just, like, swim up. Like, that to me feels like something that was totally, like, the players were trapped in this cave and me as the DM, rather than just waiting for them to either starve or the dragon to break in, I need to come up with another reason for them to be able to leave somehow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good movie.
I think it was also exceptionally smart of them to do that, because any plot holes, quote-unquote, that the movie has, they're explained away just by the thought that, like, this is a home game, which yes. I find really, like, quirky and fun workaround for, like, people who are really picky with movies, which I'm sure people are doing that, but I've not heard any hate online for this movie, which is, like, a first. Maybe I just curate my pages very well, but I don't know. How about you, Chloe?
Okay, the one thing I've seen is, and I think it's from people who haven't played D&D, because there's a lot of people who are like, it's too goofy, it's too silly. You're like, it's too, there's too much, like, of that, like, kind of failing forward thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, that's what D&D is. Like, everyone is messing up constantly.
Yeah, I actually found it to be, like, a perfect amount of silly. I thought it was going to be stupid, but it wasn't, right. Which I appreciate.
One thing I was comparing it to is, like, a Marvel movie in my head. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's very similar to, like, the Guardians of the Galaxy movies.
I was going to say it has a lot of that vibe.
Yes, which is goofy, but I think... it's appropriate. Like, it's better than, like, when Captain America is, like, making quips and one-liners where you're just kind of like, I don't know about that. But, like, it works with the, like, with the Guardians, and it works with these characters as well. Okay, let me ask you this. Who was your favorite character?
Do you have to ask me that? Do you not know?
I mean, I have my thought, but let's hear it.
It is very obviously Doric.
Yeah, knew it.
There's, like, you don't have to ask that question. Chloe, everyone that listens to this heard the giant smile in your question because he knew the answer.
I mean, Sophia Lillis, who plays Doric, also from the Netflix series I'm Not Okay With This, which we should really do.
We should do it.
We need to do that.
I'm upset they canceled it.
I'm really upset they canceled. I mean, I understand that, like, to me, it was very, like, it was a slow burn in some ways.
Yeah, and,
like,
I have complicated thoughts on that show.
Yeah, we'll talk about it some other, but she was excellent
in that.
She's
a really good actor. Yeah.
I'm glad she's, like, you know, she was in the It films, which I watched the first one while I was cat sitting. a couple weeks ago. And, okay, I'm not a big fan of Stephen King. And I'm not a big fan of horror either. Mm-hmm. But she was amazing in it. And it's not a bad film.
I don't like scary movies. She's a really good actor.
I don't even think it's that scary. I mean, it's just a clown. He's just a weird clown. It's not that scary. I don't know. I say that as someone who should have a lot of clown-induced trauma. So when I was...
What have clowns done to you?
No, wow. No. When I... Okay. In the first house we lived in growing up, which we moved from when I was like 4, but like the room, my bedroom after I left the nursery, I'm not explaining this well, but basically there was a room in the house and that was my room and it had 4 clowns painted on the walls and they were not nice looking. They were creepy looking clowns. And so every single night from the ages of like 2 to 4, I slept surrounded by weird clowns.
That is a wonderful story, and I'm so sorry your parents put you through that, but I feel like it made you who you are today.
Yes. I don't know why I don't have clown trauma.
I don't have any clown trauma either. Like, I do not... I understand logically the fear. I do not comprehend it emotionally. Yes.
It makes sense, because there's something Uncanny Valley about them, and, you know, they've been in a lot of horror, but, like, I don't know, it's something about it, especially that clown, just, like... He's so goofy. He's just like, oh, we all float down here. Oh, no, I'm not scared. You're just a jerk. So, I don't know. I think you could watch it. It's not too scary.
Okay.
That was a long, long tangent. Okay.
Who's my your favorite?
My Please, favorite character.
I'm waiting for this question, yeah.
Can you guess this one? Do you have a thought?
I have a guess.
It's probably not the one you're thinking of.
Is it the Paladin?
No, not even close. I mean, I liked Zenk Yendar, played by Regé Jean Page. I think I'm saying that right. It's like Regé Jean, yeah. But no, my favorite character was Forge Fitzwilliam, played by Hugh Grant. I love Hugh Grant, first of all. I don't really like rom-coms, but for some reason, I've always just enjoyed Hugh Grant. I think he's a huge jerk in real life, apparently, and like... I don't know. He says all this weird stuff. Like, he was doing an interview for this movie and he mentioned something about, like, it sucks these days that I can't hook up with other cast members anymore. And it's like, dude, you're like in your 60s. That's such a weird thing for you to say about, like, your cast, which was mostly people in their 20s and 30s. But okay.
Early 20s. Like, yeah. Barely 20s.
I mean, Michelle Rodriguez is in her 30s, right?
I think she's in her
30s. She's 44.
Yeah, I was going to say not early, but yeah. Okay.
She looks good.
She's been around for a while in the movies. Come on, Chloe. Okay. That Resident Evil is like 20 years old.
And Daisy Head, who played Sophina, is 32. So like 20s, 30s, and 40s. But they're still a bit younger than him. So he said some weird stuff, but I really like Hugh Grant. I thought Forge was a really interesting character because... I was really worried they were going to do that thing where he's going to be just, like, double-crossing everyone all the time, always. Mm-hmm. And, like, what side is he on? And what's he doing? And, you know, like, is he on their team or not? But we all know that he's not because he's a shyster. But, no, he... Now I'm just wondering... I'm fine. He's always on his own side. He's always kind of a jerk. And you know that. And he's the villain along with Sophina. And that is good. I like that there isn't like a lot of ambiguity around his character.
Yeah.
Because we don't need that in here. Like, this is a Dungeons and Dragons game. We don't need the ambiguous double crosser. I don't know. Like, it would feel too... Have you ever seen Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull?
Probably. I think I've seen all of them, but I was also young.
There's this jerk character who keeps double-crossing everyone. It's the bad Indiana Jones film. There's this jerk guy who keeps double-crossing every single person. And it gets so tiring because you're just like, okay, I get it. I don't trust you. And then, like, everyone keeps trusting him again. And it's like, why are you trusting him again? And I'm just glad that, like, no, Forge is a jerk. And Edgin, the bard, played by Chris Pine, pretty much knows that on the onset of,
mm-hmm.
well, the events of the movie. Like, they had been friends, but there was a betrayal, and Edgin's pretty aware that Forge is up to something pretty yeah. early on.
Which, I will say, on Beyond, Forge, the character sheet, has double cross as one of his moves.
Really?
Yeah. If Forge hits a creature friendly to him with an attack roll, the attack is automatically a critical hit, which is adorable.
I need to add that ability to some character. Okay, to some enemies. That's a fun ability.
I won't tell anyone, because our friends don't listen to this, so I'll be the only one who knows this.
Our friends don't support us, is what Val is saying.
I will say that, like, Becky has seen a side of me that I'm not proud during that movie.
Uh-oh.
Because I was...
What was that?
Every time Sofina was on stage, I was just like, wife material.
She was just for context, for people who have not seen the movie, she is a pale, bald...
She's evil!
Kind of evil, like that evil sickliness. She's a red wizard at bay, so I think she's implied to kind of be a... maybe even a lich?
Exactly.
So, a liches are your type.
Wife. I don't know, everything she did on screen was so, like, so funky fresh of her. I was a huge fan.
Man, seeing her with hair is weird.
Right? But Doric is my favorite character, but I had a massive crush on Sofina during that 2 hours.
Understandable. Mm-hmm. I mean, you gotta love a good girl boss.
Oh, a bad girl boss.
A bad girl boss.
Yeah.
Who's and just there. Go ahead.
Like,
I've talked so
when
much.
She... Stop it. Stop it, Chloe.
I'm doing what you do to me.
Well, I'm allowed to do that because I'm me. Okay. Anyway, when she finally drops her, like, black robe disguise into her red robe and reveals it all, I was, like, rooting for her for a hot minute there. I really thought that she was going to win because the party left the city before they finished the boss fight.
Yeah. That would have been a really interesting, like, this is the Empire Strikes Back of setting up the D&D universe of, like, actually the bad guys win in the first movie and then our heroes have to, like, redeem themselves in the second.
But it's so funny that they forgot, because I forgot while watching the movie that that's what they're there for, and they just took the treasure and left.
Well, they had the daughter, too, so...
Well, the treasure, yeah.
Yeah.
They got the prize.
Yes. They got what they were looking for. It wasn't what they were supposed to do, though. Which is very D&D.
It's
that
so
has
D&D.
Happened before. Like, it's definitely happened where I've just been, like... Like, I've had to break character as a DM and be like, guys, did you forget about something, maybe? Maybe there was something back in the... cave that you were supposed to do, maybe, guys. I don't know.
It is, but I loved when you, I think you did that for us in the Theros campaign a couple of times. I at least once. I do remember us scrambling at one moment, just like, there, oh no.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember exactly when it happened.
I don't remember what it was, but I remember that, like, shock to the system and the slight desperation of realizing that we just forgot the mission because we talked too much or, like, played around too much or just got distracted by something else.
It was, okay, in the first cavern that you went to, which was to find a way to translate that mask,
mm-hmm.
I do remember there was that coffin there that, like, the whole point of it was you could just play around with the coffin and it would tell you if you, like, it would give you, like, a little hint of, like, your future. Like, it was just, like, roll a d20 and find out, you know, a little, like, hint of the future. And I think you guys got very obsessed with that and spent a lot of time, like...
Probably, and
It was a pre-written adventure, so I was just running it out of the book. And, like, it was just supposed to be like, yeah, if they, you know, offer it some blood or something, like, you know, roll on this table and tell them what happens. And then it was just like you guys dropped everything. You just wanted to know all about what it was doing and what was going on. And I was just like... You're just here to get the mask translation. This is just this silly coffin with a, you know, roll on a table, but I couldn't exactly say that. So you guys spent a lot of time on it.
it sounds like us.
Anyway, back to the movie. What was your favorite? So there's a lot of action sequences.
Mm-hmm.
What was your favorite?
I really enjoyed the time stop spell. Like, okay. When we first see it, it was really good. I've never been able to visualize it in my head. And the way they did it is so, like, fun and interesting. Yeah. And now I have, like, a little placeholder for that if we ever use that spell. Because we have used it a few times.
Yeah, I have used it. My character can use it, so.
Yeah.
And I like that they portray it. Like, this is so over. You know, this is supposed to be a ninth level spell. This is supposed to be one of the most powerful spells in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Safina uses it, it's a trump card. You know, like,
yeah,
she wins if she succeeds in casting this spell, which is how that spell should pretty much be, unless, you know, you're fighting someone who's capable of either countering it or, you know, is similarly as skilled as you are and therefore can survive whatever shenanigans you're going to do in that time stop window. Mm-hmm. So, like, yeah, I like that when it was portrayed, it was like, oh my God, if she gets this spell off, we're all dead.
Yeah, because we've seen it work before. Like, yes. That's how this whole thing started. I really like Simon's counterspell being invisible.
Yeah.
And just the way that they reacted. It was very much a moment where you knew the group paused for, like, a minute and talked about it.
Yeah.
Like, if this was a game, the DM would be listening to them going, like, let's just pretend it worked.
Yeah, yeah. If she casts time stop, I'll counter it, and you guys pretend like it worked, and that way we can get the drop on her. And the DM is kind of like, well, there isn't anything in the rules about that, and technically she would probably know if her spell was countered, but whatever, it's cool, so we're going to go with it.
Exactly.
Yes.
There's just, like, I don't know, it felt very human to me. It felt very people coming together to have fun. It didn't feel like the DM was against the players at any point, which I also appreciate. I like that, you know, they sacrificed the treasures for the mission, which also feels like something we've done probably a few times at this point.
Yeah.
It's just like, as players, we don't care, right? But as characters, our characters care a little bit about, like, the treasure, I mean.
Yeah.
And like, it's... There were a lot of very interesting character building moments that were so cliche, but, like, used really well. I really liked it. Also, Dan told me that in their arena scene, the people in the cage were apparently from either the movie or the show. Was it the show?
Yeah, they're from the animated show. Yeah, the one I was telling about. The kids.
That's cute.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's really fun that they
And I think they survived. They did not kill the kids, so.
No, I don't. Yeah, I think they all lived.
Yeah. Unlike some of the other people in there.
It was really fun with the gelatinous cube. I gotta say.
That was perfect. That they just that the one person turns the corner and just sprints into it. Because that's exactly what happened to my character.
She died, right? No. That's Selsby.
Yeah.
I wasn't there for that.
She was sprinting through a dungeon, turned a corner, and sprinted directly into a gelatinous cube. And had to be pulled out.
Did I join, like, right after that session or a couple of sessions? Because that seemed like it was a very recent development when I started playing with you guys.
Yes, that was actually two or three sessions before you joined, I think.
Gotcha. It felt fresh.
Yes. Selsby was very salty about it for a long time, though.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but there's a detail that I lost my mind over when it was happening, but right before the dragon, when Zank is fighting all the liches and, like, the whatnot, the servants Thayan of
soldiers, whatever, Thayan assassins,
he cast Holy Weapon, and it lasted like one turn. I don't know if it was 6 seconds in the movie, but, like, it lasted a turn and then it went away, and I was like, "What? That's so cool!" I don't know why, but that detail got me. Like, usually in movies, when something like that happens and a sword starts to glow, that's, like, the triumph card, right? That's, like, that's it. The battle is over. But that's what I thought was going to happen. But no, they just did the spell as intended. It was really excellent. I don't know why, but that part really got me.
I I know what you, yeah, it was very cool. They depicted, I mean, I know they had to take some liberties, and you see people online saying, like, you know, like, a druid can't wild shape into a owl bear, or can't wild shape while wild shaped, and, you know, like, all these other things that people are pointing out, like, mm-hmm. they can't wild shape, like, five times in a single scene, but it's
but they
like,
can, because it's movie magic.
Yeah, it's like, but it made sense, it made it more cinematic, and most of the other stuff, like, that final fight with Sofina was actually, I feel like, done very close to the rules. Like, yeah. There's the part where her concentration gets disrupted and her spell ends.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that was fun.
And then the fight between the two Bigsby's hands. Like,
yeah, that was cool. It
was so cool. And it's, again, it's pretty, like, in the rules that, like, I think the hand has hit points. And so if there were two hands fighting, they could totally grapple each other and damage each other. And, yeah, that works. And there was just so many moments where it just felt like you could see the mechanics of the game.
Yeah.
And the rules that were being made.
Absolutely. You could also see their stats.
Yes.
I mean, in that cave scene specifically with the, what is it, Mind Eater? The little brain.
Oh, the Intellect Devourers.
That, yeah. Like, that one specifically was just like a funny jest about their low intelligence.
Yeah.
But with, for example, with Holga, you can tell she has very low wisdom just from yes. everything she says. And it's very, and it's not played off as like she's stupid. She is, but not like in a way that you usually would assume. Not in the way that movies very often create stupid characters.
Yeah.
Like, this is a very believable, like, just a person who's a little dumb. I really liked it. And I liked her ex-husband, a very D&D-esque.
Marlamin, played by Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
I also really like that Holga has a type, which is very short men.
And that her husband has a type, which is which Holga.
which is very big women.
Yeah. Which is true to D&D. Like, how many times have we encountered people like that? Like, it's just a fun trope. It's really yeah. cool.
While I'm going through my list of questions, was there anything you didn't like? Or didn't work for you?
I don't think there was anything I disliked, honestly. They put in a lot of lore. They had the Harpers. Harpers?
Yep.
Yeah. I really like Simon's wild magic. I wish they had a little bit more of it, though.
Yeah.
Because we only had, I think, the one time.
I mean, they didn't even summon any unicorns.
Exactly. So, as a DM... and a player, like, just, I enjoyed it very much as a player. Can you talk a little bit more about, like, watching it as someone who DMs? You've mentioned a bunch of things, but, like, just overall.
Yeah, I mean, overall, as a DM, it's really exciting to see something that feels, like, so real to the game brought to life. I feel like we said that 1,000 times already, so let me try and be more specific and interesting mm-hmm. about it.
Yeah, be more interesting, Chloe. Come on.
I'm trying. Okay. Well, one thing I want to say that I haven't mentioned so far, but you know, this is set in Faerun, which mm-hmm. is the Forgotten Realms. And oh my God, I was so excited to see just like it's part of it is set like the prison that they start in is near Icewind Dale. And then most of the story takes place around Neverwinter. And I ran a Neverwinter campaign for about a year back in 2013, like a decade ago. In that campaign, you know, it was set in Neverwinter and they had the Neverwinter on the screen was like, just like the Neverwinter I imagined. And like, it had everything. The volcano was there. The layout of the city matched approximately what was in the books. Lord Neverember was mentioned. You hear all these other mentioned, like, Simon is the descendant of Elminster, who I hate and is a jerk, but fine, you know, he's important. Zaz Tom is mentioned, who's like the head of Thay and this weird super lich guy, and I like that he made kind of an appearance. He was a little Voldemort-y for my taste, but I think he is actually supposed to look like that, so maybe Voldemort is a little Zaz Tammy. I also like that there was, you know, like there's just so many references to the Sword Coast. I think someone mentioned Baldur's Gate at one point. There's a map and you can see Afkatla on there, Anom. I think you even saw Cormyr on there.
We sure did, because we talked about it with Becky during the thing.
Like, yes, that's where all the hot people are.
they're all 11s.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just, as someone who, I'm not like the biggest Forgotten Realms fan ever, like, I definitely have not read any of the Drizzt's books, and I only like, I've dipped my toes in the lore just for like characters I've been playing to like learn about what gods they might worship and whatnot, but I really don't know it. Like, I don't live and breathe the Forgotten Realms, but what we saw here was just so true to the actual books. And I think that's really amazing. They didn't have to do that. They very easily could have changed things. They could have made Neverwinter a very different city and just called it Neverwinter. They could have, you know, set this on a different plane even. They could have used just a random fantasy plane or Greyhawk or something. Yeah, like, but they just, it's just that level of detail where they're like, no, we're going to go the extra mile. We're going to be true to the lore. Neverember is the Lord of Neverwinter, even though that's ridiculous. Their names are like, why is the guy's Neverember, but he's the Lord of Neverwinter? It never made sense to me. But I just thought it was really great how they brought that all in. And I don't know, I feel like, as someone who like grew up playing like Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale and Neverwinter Nights and all these games, just seeing it in like a motion picture and like so vivid, it was just like, I don't know, it just like broke my brain on a certain level. Like, it was just so amazing, like tear in my eye, like a single tear rolling down my cheek. Like, oh my god, like my rosebud.
Yeah, there's care shown for something that is a very big part of our life.
Yes.
And it's very rarely shown that, except for like in our circles. And now it's very mainstream and really cool.
Yeah, we're really cool now.
I mean, we were always cool.
Okay, but like everyone knows it now.
I figured out one thing that it's not a criticism of the movie. It is something that was brought to my attention through Tumblr. Cannot find the post. I've been searching for it. I'm going to keep looking, so maybe we can link it to this episode.
Okay.
But someone wrote like a little essay thing. It was a very interesting analysis, but they talked about tieflings and the history of tieflings and how initially tieflings had customization tables.
Yeah.
Because they were hybrids, right? So there was a lot of variables that you can have. And after a while, when D&D started to be commercialized more, they had to standardize tiefling looks. So that's how we got the horned-tailed, demon-esque looking tieflings. And this movie even more so made the tiefling look very plain. And like, Doric can pass as a non-tiefling very easily. And like, I'm sure there's commentary on that can be made, but I'm speaking generally as like, just the history of this whole thing, right? Just the mainstream kind of easy to sell products this way, if something looks exactly how we know it looks kind of thing. And like, they could have made her look a little cooler as a tiefling, but she looks super cool as a druid, so I'm at odds with my own statements here.
I think I disagree with this a little, actually. I think she's actually pretty true to the original vision of what a tiefling was.
Yeah?
So, tieflings emerged, because I know this, in the Planescape campaign setting written by Zeb Cook, which came out in the mid-90s, and they are not necessarily supposed to be, like, the way we think of them. Like, now they're supposed to be kind of, in some capacity, devil-blooded. Whether it's from like a fiendish ancestor or some kind of bargain that was made in the past. But I think originally they were supposed to be more generic, like human and touched by something else from probably one of the lower planes. And so one of the first characters that was a tiefling, like that was like very famous, was Anna from Planescape Torment. And let me send you a picture of her.
Am I gonna fall in love?
She's very kind of mid-90s cheesecakey, but
okay,
if that's your thing. But you'll see just how like human she looks.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So
she doesn't even have horns. She's got a tail. Maybe she has horns under her little bangs that are maybe hiding it.
And I don't know. And a swimsuit.
Yeah, and she's wearing a weird, sexy swimsuit for some reason, even though she's a rogue. But, like, the point is that, like, yeah, like, that's what tieflings originally are supposed to look like. They're humans with maybe, like, one little demonic feature. And in fact, I believe in the earliest versions of the 5th edition tiefling, they went back to that. And they actually had, like, you would roll on a table and pick one kind of, like, devil demonic feature.
Oh, that's and cool. So I play my tiefling wrong.
No. because they've changed that. Because I think people... So around... Starting with 4th edition, that's when they made the tieflings a little more devilish. And part of this has to do... Okay, I'm going to rewind for a second. Mm-hmm. So there was the satanic panic in the 1980s where D&D was accused of like making kids into like devil worshippers. So as part of that, for a long time, Dungeons and Dragons did not acknowledge demons or devils. They changed their names. I forget what exactly the demons were called. I don't know, something like Tanazi, and devils were called like Baruch or something. Mm-hmm. But they were given these names, and like you couldn't, like, people who wrote D&D materials were told, you do not acknowledge demons or devils exist. They do not exist in the D&D universe. Instead, we use these two other terms because we don't want to be called satanic. And so as part of that, tieflings couldn't be too oriented with devils or demons because they didn't exist. And so, but once 4th edition came around, that's when they finally were like, no, devils and demons are back. And they wanted tieflings to be part of that. And they wanted to make them look more, I don't know, more interesting than just like, I'm a human with a horn or something. You're like, So that's when we get the modern idea of tieflings where they're, you know, horned and tailed and their, you know, skin is a non-human shade of colors. And maybe even they've got cloven hooves and, you know, like that kind of emerged very recently. So that's my feeling. And in fact, they actually put out a supplement for 4th edition that was specifically focused on tieflings and why they look the way they do, which I used to own. I don't own it anymore.
I really like tieflings. Maybe it's because people play them really well in media that I watch and listen to. Like we had two very prominent ones in Critical Role. I believe NADPOD had one of the guest players be a tiefling, and he was in the show for like 6 or 7 episodes and in a miniseries. But just like, I really like tieflings. They're always very funky fresh. I keep saying that this episode, I don't know what's happening with me.
Val is very funky fresh this episode.
Funky fresh today.
Well, while we're talking about races, which this is a weird... I feel like D&D should just switch to ancestries. I feel like that's a better term. Because I think that's what Pathfinder did. And I guess they don't want to do just what Pathfinder did. I don't know. But, like, I feel like ancestry is a better term. But anyways, the races, because that's what they call them, in the movie, there was a lot of different... Like, they had halflings and gnomes.
That Tabaxi, Aarakocra, I think, right?
Tabaxi. Yeah, there's the Tabaxi
with the fish.
Kid.
Yeah.
With the fish. And the mom, I think.
Uh-huh.
Half elves, wood elves. You know, you saw a lot of different races. And I like that so much of it, like the Tabaxi was not CGI. It was someone in a fursuit.
Yeah.
Like, it was so nice that they did. And, like, same with the Aarakocra. That was someone in, like, a bird costume.
I really like that. I miss that sort of, like, stuff in movies.
And it looks so good. And if it had just been some, I don't know, like, the whole thing where they break out the window and they're holding on to it would have looked so cheesy if it had been a CGI Aarakocra.
Yeah.
Aarakocra is a bird person. It's like a crow person. I should mention for people who don't know.
Figure it out, friends. Come on. You have Google.
Yeah, yeah.
Just spell Aarakocra.
This is not a nice Taz reference.
It was it? Cool.
Yeah, there was that part where they're in, I forget where it was, but they were, Griffin was asking them a bunch of trivia. And one of the trivia questions was spell Aarakocra.
Yeah, it's very hard.
Yes. Anyway, so, yeah, I like the diversity of it. Because I feel like, again, a lot of fantasy that you see that's, like, real life, it's either, like, CGI or it's, like, we got elves and therefore we just gave some people some pointed ears.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you actually see, like, some practical effects, like the hair and the makeup, which I know takes forever and is very difficult for the actors and can also be like very physically demanding,
mm-hmm.
Just because being in like a giant bird costume under those hot lights for hours while you try and get this very technical scene right is very difficult. So shout out to them for not taking the easy way, but actually, you know, doing something hard, and it paid off, I think.
It did. I'm a huge fan of this movie. I honestly, like, I came from a work dinner. I was very tired. But, like, after that movie, like, it fixed everything. It was really, really good. I'm trying to think of... I like how there's, like, a weird prophecy thing happening, but it's not a prophecy. With Edgin and his, like, Harper background and getting back in.
Yeah.
And also just, like, for, what's the paladin's name? Oh, my God.
Zank.
Thank you. With Zank having, like, his people, like, the history of the people and, like, stopping that cycle. I don't know. There's a lot of, like, interesting things that you can see a DM would create for players to pursue. Like, for example, when Dan gives us, like, 3-4 things that we could do at any given time when we have, like, downtime, and then we can choose what to do. Like, it felt very much like that. And I really like it.
Okay. Sorry. I'm just reading now. Apparently there's going to be a spin-off television series.
Interesting, because I was going to ask you, like, how do you see this going further? Like,
well,
what do you expect from the franchise?
According to Wikipedia, there's going to be an 8-episode series on Paramount Plus.
Mm-hmm. A thing that no one has, right?
I think I had it for a while because I got it for free from something, but yeah, no one has it. And then one of the directors was asked about a film sequel, and he said, it was never our intention when we came on board this film to make a franchise. Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, they set up for a sequel, though, because the whole thing with Zaz Tom is kind of unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they set up for a sequel. I don't know. I think they're just being coy here. I'm not sure who's going to be in the TV series. I don't think it's going to be the main cast is what this seems to be hinting at.
I hope not.
Yeah. I'd like to see other people.
They were an excellent cast. I didn't mean to sound callous, but like, I also want to see like a lower level party do their thing.
So this party was pretty, I mean, they're meant to be pretty strong already in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm. They've already ventured.
Yes, it would be interesting to see, like, an 8-episode series that was, like, a adventuring party starting out. A lot more funny stuff tends to happen at lower levels, I feel like. A lot more goofy stuff, at least.
Yeah, and also you have, like, 6 HP, so you're very cautious in combat. That was
Or you're not.
Or you're not, because you're level 1. What's going to happen? You're going to die and make a new character?
Not the end of the world.
Which is actually what I was... If I was to imagine a sequel... I would, you know how they did like a little info dump in the beginning with the bard?
Yeah.
I would have had something similar with, like, this party finishing up their thing, and then, like, it actually is about a completely new party.
Interesting.
Which, if a show does a low-level party, I'll get exactly what I want. So
okay.
That's pretty neat.
Give Val what she wants.
Give me what I want.
What she really, really wants.
No, this movie was excellent. I'm still hyped from it.
Yeah, I want to see it. I'm going to see it again.
You should.
I will.
I'm not invited.
You can't stop me. I mean, you can come, I guess, if you have to.
If I have to.
Any final thoughts?
No.
See this movie.
See this movie. I hope that everyone agrees that Doric is the best.
Or Hugh Grant, a.k.a. Forge.
Hugh Grant, he just, in every movie, he just plays himself.
Yeah,
which but is it fair. Works for it this, works. It works really well.
He's supposed to be a rogue and a con artist, which is what Hugh Grant, I don't know, he's got that energy down.
He has it down. Every single time he was on screen, I was like giggling because it felt like he just walked onto the...
It really did feel like he just walked onto the set and was just like... I was just like, I'm going to be the bad guy in your movie, guys. And then he grabbed a costume and walked on stage.
Exactly. Like, it has strong energy of just confusion. He got isekai'd. That's what happened.
Oh, God. this is the canon now, is that this is actually just Forge Fitzwilliams.
You know the player that Hugh makes Grant's. A character that's just them?
Oh, God.
That's... Who
don't ever played. Do please don't ever do it's so awkward when the DM gets mad at or like bullies that character in some way and then that player because they're playing themselves gets very upset because they can't separate themselves from their character because they are their character and it gets really awkward. Don't play yourself.
You mean it's uncomfortable, Chloe? I should stop doing that with all the characters I play.
You don't play yourself.
Maybe never you will.
Play Yeah, no, you. Because I had a player once who played a character who was just his name backwards is how he named his character. And the entire party started to hate him. And he got really offended that everyone hated him because he was just like, I'm just playing myself, guys. And I remember Sarah being like, well, if you're playing yourself, then you're kind of a jerk. Like, she didn't say that to his face, but like... It really was that, like, it was just, like, so awkward.
No, our group is good about it.
Yes.
We're very creative people.
That we are. On that note, I don't know why I said it so weird, but on that note, thank you all for tuning in. Just want to mention our social media. Our Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest is at InMediaLez. Our subreddit is r/InMediaLez, and our Tumblr is...
thepodinmedialess.tumblr.com.
You can email us at inmedialess@gmail.com, and our website is inmedialess.com. Thank you to everyone who rates, likes, subscribes, interacts with us in any capacity. We love you.
Yeah, subscribe. It's easy. It's easier to find our podcast like that.
I mean, or you can just constantly search for it and make your life slightly more difficult. It's up to you.
Which is honestly also very impressive. But you know what?
You burn a couple extra calories, you know, doing all those taps on your phone to type in media lives. No, it's just, it's exercise. It's
practical.
Val. It's exercise.
It has uses.
Yes.
Well, if you do that, we'll hopefully see you in the next one.
And Bahamut bless you.